In recent years, Halliburton has come to represent a certain kind of relationship between the federal government and big business. But do you have any idea of what Halliburton actually does? Well, joining me now for today's edition of Backstory is Vijay Vaitheswaran, an energy correspondent for The Economist and author of the book Power to the People. I'm very pleased to welcome him to my show. Hello.
Hi there. It's great to be here.
How did Halliburton actually start out? Halliburton Company, right?
That's right. In fact, Halliburton started in some ways, as people might expect, a company in the oil business, cementing oil wells back at the beginning of the century, and they were really an oil drilling company. The part of it that we tend to associate with what's going on in Iraq and a lot of the controversies of late is a division of Halliburton that they didn't actually buy until 1962, which is the Brown and Root division, which is a construction company that did a lot of government work over the years.
So has Halliburton just focused on oil drilling and energy?
For most of its history, it was chiefly an oil services industry. They don't actually, unlike Exxon or BP or the oil majors, they don't own oil reserves. They are service contractors. They come in and these are the guys. These are the real cutting edge, so to speak. These are the roughnecks that come in and do the hard work, the dangerous work of drilling. And their rivals are companies like Schlumberger, which is a French company, and others that are at the leading edge of oil technology for drilling.
And has Halliburton always been successful? Because the oil business has had its fluctuations.
Absolutely. Now, the oil majors themselves, the big companies, are cyclical to begin with, depending on the oil price. But these guys are like the tail of the dog. I mean, their variance in share price and profitability is even more variable than those of the oil majors. So it's always an up-and-down business.
And you, as you mentioned, Kellogg, Brown, and Root is Halliburton's best-known subsidiary. What does it do?
The Brown and Root part of Kellogg Brown and Root, which is really the one that I think is part of American political mythology, started again almost about a century ago as a construction company and began in Texas and Oklahoma with contracts for the government, starting to do supervising government Navy ships for was the first contract, but really shot to fame when a local Texas congressman by the name of Lyndon Johnson came on the radar screen. The company had a big dam that they were building, and they wanted to make sure they got paid. And so they developed a very cozy relationship with LBJ. So cozy, in fact, that in what might be one of the most famous elections in American history, one where it is widely alleged that LBJ stole the Senate seat, or at least the Democratic primary seat, from a very popular governor of the time, Stevenson, Brown and Root provided not only money, but actually provided the helicopters in what was one of the first use of helicopters in a political campaign.
And did that relationship continue after Brown and Root was bought by Halliburton? Because as I understand it, KBR was very involved in Vietnam, wasn't it?
That's right. It certainly was. In fact, the consortium that Halliburton or Brown and Root, the division, was part of, is thought to have built maybe 80-85% of all the construction done in Vietnam. Protesters used to decry it as burn and loot because they associated it so closely with the Pentagon.
Now, why would a company that started off cementing oil wells and was involved in drilling want to own something like KBR? It seems to me that this is conglomeratization at its wildest.
I think you're right, and this is actually something that a lot of people perhaps don't distinguish, at least in the popular press and certainly on the streets where there are a lot of protests about Halliburton. The oil drilling business it certainly has something to do with the international construction business. They both do business in wild and woolly places, often quite dangerous. You need to recruit a certain personality of profile. A lot of engineers are involved, a lot of former military people in both businesses. And often, frankly, there's a lot of very shady business being done quietly in places that are away from the light of sunshine. So you might say there's some commonality. But drilling for oil rigs or drilling for oil and building oil rigs is a very different business than fixing latrines or doing the laundry of American soldiers.
And I gather that KBR wasn't the most attractive company to buy.
Not at all. And well, here's the point. I mean, there's no doubt that there is something outrageous about the business that Kellogg, Brown and Root and similar competitors are in. But it's not quite the scam that people think. You know, people associate Iraq, the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney used to run Halliburton, that somehow this Iraq war is how Halliburton is making its money and that Cheney himself is personally benefiting from this war. If you actually look at the numbers, this doesn't actually add up. just take the idea that the company is looting Iraq for vast profits. The Kellogg Brown and Root division is the least profitable division of Halliburton by far. Just to give a small example, the margins in this kind of construction business are maybe 2-3%. That's about what Halliburton earns on a good year, 4% margins. The drilling side of the business, which is the largest part of Halliburton, earns 25% margins or higher, which is extraordinary. This is the dog of the company, to such a point that about a week ago, Halliburton announced it's about to try to sell off part of Kellogg Brown and Root.
Later we'll get into the charges of overbilling from KBR. But since KBR isn't all that profitable, what effect has it had on Halliburton's stock price? Halliburton, as you say, makes an awful lot of money from its basic business.
That's right. Well, Halliburton, like its peer group, you have to compare within its sector, which is the oil field services companies. They've all done splendidly well because, of course, the oil price has gone from $10 a barrel in 1999 to, we know, we just hit a record high of $75. There's a massive investment boom in the oil business to look for more oil. And the number one beneficiaries, are even more than Exxon or BP, have been the guys out there who are being paid to drill. And so they've enjoyed a great boom.
But because they make money whether oil is found or not.
That's
they're
right.
Just getting
they're
paid to
services.
Do the job.
But here's the one of the dirty little secrets that never really makes the headlines. As far back as 2 years ago, when I looked at the numbers, Kellogg Brown and Root had been dragging down Halliburton's share value to a point where it was about a third below its competitive set. Companies like Schlumberger and the other guys that do exactly the same thing. People on Wall Street were saying if only they got rid of this low-margin, highly controversial business that keeps getting them in the news, we would the share values would shoot up, and that's exactly what they're trying to do.
Does Halliburton have any other subsidiaries?
This is the primary subsidiary. They, by and large, I mean, they have a number of small companies doing various aspects of drilling.
My guest is Vijay Vaitheswaran, an energy correspondent for The Economist. We're talking about Halliburton and Kellogg Brown Root as part of our backstory today. Well, you said that they're selling off KBR, but they're not really. They're selling 20%. They're setting up an IPO for 20% of the company, so they really want to control it. They just are willing to give up a little bit of the control?
The first step in this, it's not as easy to sell off initially because they actually inherited some liabilities to do with asbestos, which wasn't Halliburton's fault. They bought a company called Dresser some years back and inherited some legacy liability issues. So the first step is to float off about 20%. But the longer-term vision, I think, is actually to sell off this division altogether where it would leave Halliburton much more profitable.
And this is something that's been in the works for a while. One of the first stories you wrote for The Economist in 2004 suggested that they were contemplating selling off KBR.
That's right. I did put challenged the chairman of the company at the time, and he admitted what has now come to pass, that his intention was to sell off Kellogg Brown and Root.
And has it helped Halliburton's stock?
Well, Halliburton's share prices over the last few years skyrocketed. But I think that one is the news of the possible sale. The second thing is actually the oil price, which has helped all oil companies and oil services companies. That's really the mega trend.
Now, when did KBR get its first contract with the Pentagon?
Well, KBR's first work, well, back in the old days when it was Brown and Root, that's really the legacy company, started back about 90 years ago supervising the construction of Navy warships. But again, it was the building of a big dam near Austin that was began the cozy relationship with government that started with LBJ that has continued through both Democratic and Republican administrations all the way through to the current one with Vice President Dick Cheney.
What is the significance of Kellogg being added to Brown and Root?
Kellogg, I think, also has, again, it's a 100-year history of being a construction company, again, with political connections. But in a way, Brown and Root was the one that I think is the right target for people's ire. But the bigger story, though, they both are representative of a bigger problem that I'm outraged about that I think really gets missed in throwing rocks only at Halliburton. That is the broad trend in the last 20 years since the days of Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher to privatize military operations. And I think, I mean, this is the true scandal that will endure long after Bush and Cheney leave office. And even though I write for a free market magazine, I think this is something terrible that we really need to address.
And not just privatization, but also no-bid contracts. Why no-bid contracts? I remember when people started complaining, it was suggested that nobody else could do this except KBR, and so it was useless to have bids, even go through bids. Is that likely?
Well, there's a lot of confusion about the no-bid contracts. Let me start by saying I think fundamentally the way that the Pentagon, and not only here in the U.S., but in Britain and Australia, very curiously, it's an Anglo-Saxon trend towards privatization around the world and private sector contracting of military. It's not true in continental Europe by and large or other places. But this trend is something that has greatly benefited these companies. But I think it's fundamentally wrong because while the private sector can bring in lots of efficiencies, the Pentagon has shown it is not able to do proper oversight. These things matter only when you can have transparency, oversight, checks and balances. Right now, about 40% of all the contracts the Pentagon does are done on a non-competitive basis. I mean, that's ridiculous, and there's no meaningful check and balance. In the case of Halliburton, you asked about the no-bid contracts. There's a lot of confusion about what happened when they went into Iraq. They were not awarded a contract specifically to go into Iraq. There was a large logistics contract, in fact, that the Clinton administration awarded, or the Army under the Clinton era, for them to do work in the Balkans. And by almost all accounts, they actually performed quite well without much scandal. It was done as a successful contract in that period, which was continued under the terms of the contract when they went into Iraq.
I was surprised because Dick Cheney was chairman and CEO of Halliburton at the time, and the Clinton administration must have been aware that they were giving this no-bid contract to a company that was run by a man who was really deeply involved in Republican politics.
This is my point, that this is a bipartisan conspiracy. If you're looking for conspiracies, I mean, I love conspiracies. I just think that the one that this was a war that was blood for oil to hand the money to Halliburton, it doesn't actually make sense when you think through how the Pentagon process works. Both parties are on the gravy train. In particular, the contractors have friends in both parties.
But hasn't Dick Cheney been in a very special position of influence because he was the Secretary of Defense for the first President Bush, and then he was at Halliburton, and then he became Vice President? It does smack of a problem, even if somebody looks into it and says there isn't any.
There's no question that there's in my opinion, there's tremendous problems, potential conflicts of interest that arise from the coziness between governments and the senior and these contractors. What Cheney has done in this case is he set up a blind trust before he became vice president, where all of his holdings in Halliburton would be indifferent to whether the share price went up or down, whether revenues went up or down, and it's a blind trust administrator where all the profits after tax go to charities, and it's an irrevocable trust that's been set up. So he has taken some efforts to deal with the conflict of interest question. My point is, and in fact, of course, the contract his company was awarded under the Clinton administration. It wasn't a Republican administration at the time. But nonetheless, I think when you don't have proper oversight, you don't have to be vice president to be able to steer contracts to Halliburton. There's a much more, there's a bigger systemic problem here.
And talking about oversight, Bunny Greenhouse got in trouble for trying to apply some oversight.
That's right. During hearings that were held by Democratic senators, because the Republicans refused to participate, it was seen as a partisan hearing. But in fact, we did see testimony from Bunny and several others pointing to cost overruns, abuses. These are, in my opinion, outrageous, but they're not unique to Halliburton. If you saw, for example, one of its main rivals during the 1990s, which also called Dynacorp. The contract in the Balkans, which was a competitive bid contract that the Clinton administration had given to Halliburton, the second time round they lost it. A rival called Dyncorp won it. And Dyncorp was accused also of racketeering under the RICO Act, which is a very powerful charge, and Halliburton won it back. My point is a pox on all their houses, because the system actually allows these abuses, and it encourages it because we have these cost-plus contracts that say, spend what you like, we'll give you a profit on top of it.
But
it's outrageous.
But when you're the largest contractor in Iraq, as of June 2005, KBR had contracts for $11.84 billion in services, about 50,000 employees working in Iraq and Kuwait. And then they have a scandal in which there are these meals for soldiers that they charge but never delivered. That seems like petty stuff.
This is my point, though, that it's death by a thousand paper cuts. You have so little oversight over the people in the field. And the meal scandal, for example, the idea that they would be charging for meals that weren't served. That's one, it could be completely outrageous scam for the local field comptroller of Halliburton to make a buck. What Halliburton says is, you know, we were told we have to prepare X number of meals. If soldiers are redeployed, we still have to have the meals ready even if they don't turn up. And that has been verified by outside auditors. So the fog of war makes it impossible to verify every detail. That's why I say these things are best done by the military itself. Nobody in that situation can be scrutinized properly.
Is this a part of Donald Rumsfeld's vision of a pared-down military, or you're suggesting it goes back to the Reagan years?
Certainly, it works. It fits in very well, and the trend has accelerated under Rumsfeld because he believes in an asset-light, small military. And we look in Colombia, for example, where the U.S. is getting increasingly involved with a civil war, a very nasty civil war. Congress put strict limits on how much the U.S. intervention force should be. But thanks to private contractors, and many companies in that case, we are actually having a bigger footprint of involvement. I think this is a very unfortunate development, but that it does predate Rumsfeld. He has many failings, and I think he should be sacked, but this is not one that you can blame only on Rumsfeld.
Was KBR also involved with the cleanup after the hurricanes?
They were awarded a contract, a competitive bid contract, in fact, before the hurricane, under which they were asked to come in and help with the cleanup. That's right.
Have there been any suggestions of overbilling in those cases?
Inevitably, there have already been suggestions of overbilling and ineptitude. These are the two typical scandals that come up. And on a number of times, they have been caught. The SEC rightly fined them. But the amount of the fine a few years back was $7.5 million. It's peanuts when you consider the size of the enterprise.
And it's shocking to most Americans that they get caught again and again, them and other companies, and yet they continue to do business. In fact, wind up the only companies doing business in many cases.
Fundamentally, this is the ideological problem we have. The Pentagon wants to hive off a lot of these services, so it's not reflected on the balance sheet. But we don't have a meaningful way to do oversight. During the 90s, when Halliburton was in the Bosnia and Herzegovina and related countries, we had the same number of, roughly speaking, about the same number of people overseeing their work as we do now in Iraq, where the contracts are 15 times the size. And so, instead of multiplying the number of oversight officials, we're trying to hand out money left and right without really being able to see where it's going and keeping people honest.
Thank you so much for participating in Backstory today. Vijay Vaitheswaran, he is energy correspondent for The Economist, and his book is Power to the People. It's been a real pleasure.
It's my pleasure, too.